Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
And good morning, listeners. This is Patty Black. I am back bringing the Good News Show to you. I am on air with Sherry, and this morning's guest is going to be, we're going to have a very interesting and exciting show. We will have Chris Mulligan, who is an author, and she will be on with us for about 30 minutes. Chris has a book entitled Afterlife Agreements, A Gift from Beyond. And the book demonstrates the continuing relationship between a mother and son after death. And it is encouraging indeed. It helps understand the grieving process. So join us now and listen to the wisdom of life as experienced through this magnificent author. Sherry, are you on air with me?
I am on air, and just wanted to say that it's a very unique story, and I'm very interested myself to hear more from Chris. And, you know, we wake up every day and we gift, and the gift is to have another day. And we need to live that day each day to the fullest and to be able to experience every moment. So do we have Chris on the air?
I believe we do. Hello. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Hi.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
Good. We're happy to have you. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Oh, sure. Okay. I'm a social worker. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, and this was my life prior to 8 years ago. It's still the same, but my life has become very different in the last 8 years. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology. I have a master's degree in clinical child, youth, and family work, which is the focus is working with at-risk kids and their families. That was my goal, was to work with at-risk kids. And so as a social worker, I worked for and with a variety of populations, from geriatrics to kids with sex abuse issues. Mm-hmm. And in the last 8 years specifically, I've worked with adoptions and adoptive families and kids with who are in the adoption track. And so prior to 8 years ago, my focus was very other focused. I was really in my social worker world, and I was taking care of others out there. And now my work is still in the social work field, but my whole focus has changed because of my life experience that happened 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell our listeners what a little about what happened 8 years ago and how it evolved into you becoming a writer and actually having a book published?
Thank you. Okay, 8 years ago, on October 1st, 2000, my 21-year-old son, Zach, was killed in a car accident. And my life absolutely catapulted into just a total world that I was so unfamiliar with. I had no idea what grief was really like. I was a social worker who taught classes in grief. I researched for my job. I worked with many kids and their families who had grief and loss issues. But until I was thrown into it, I had no idea what grief was all about. And this is what happened. As a result of Zach's death, my life totally changed, although I maintained the same belief system I've always had. It was tested absolutely to the core of my being when I was going through my own grief. And it was not a goal of mine to write a book or to be an author, because, you know, like others, I had no idea what my life plan was. I thought I was going to go on and be a social worker. But because his death showed me so many lessons and I had so many things to learn along the way in this life, that again, you know, like others, my life experience demonstrated those lessons in a totally different way. And my path took a different course, and this is how I wrote the book of my journey through grief.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were just talking about the biggest loss in life is when you lose someone that you love. There is no greater loss or grief.
Absolutely. I had lost grandparents, other relatives, and I'm not to minimize anyone else's loss, because I understand. I'm going through right now watching my mother through the last stage of Alzheimer's, and so I do understand other people's grief. I also know that I never want to experience this again. The death of a child affects every fiber of your being. It goes down to the soul level of who you are, and you question who you are and where you are, and if you even have a life after the death of a child. I felt so crazy, and I didn't feel like who I was anymore, and that's why I questioned it.
So it was almost like a rebirthing for you, getting in touch with your being.
Absolutely. When I was writing this book, I realized I was so unfocused. I was just devastated. I didn't know where my life stood. I was just shattered. And so what the book was is it was my journal. It was my first year of grief, and so I know journaling works for many people. It has worked for me in the past, but I needed to have a focus. I needed to have something, some place to go to be able to show me where I was and who I was. And because of the devastation, I had to see where I was. I needed a historical perspective of what I was doing and where my life was going, and I found it was the best thing I could have done for myself.
Well, that was going to be my question to you was going to be, did you start with journaling? Is that how you started with your writing? It sounds like that was your way of getting balanced, or your outlet for your grieving and the emotions involved in that.
That was exactly it. Everything changed. My entire life, the feelings, the thoughts, the situations. You know, you go through depression, you go through PTSD symptoms, and it's just so crazy making that. And I've spoken with so many other families. I'm real grateful for the Compassionate Friends, because I've been involved with them, and it's a wonderful group of people who have experienced the same thing. And it does. It affects every fiber of your being, and it tests your morals and your values and your belief system, which is exactly what it did to me, even though I had a very strong belief system in the hereafter and life lessons and having our own responsibility for our own life that we charted. And boy, when Zach died, it seemed like I walked out of the hospital after removing the life support on Zach, and I handed over my belief system to the admittance desk, and I didn't know who I was after that. Mm-hmm. So I needed something, and that's where my journal came in.
So tell our listeners, how did you become aware that this was something that you were able to connect and communicate with your son?
Okay.
Well, let's first tell the listeners the title of your book.
Okay, thank you. Okay, it's Afterlife Agreements, A Gift from Beyond. And
okay.
And what happened was, again, like I said, I had a belief system in place prior to his death that we do come here with a plan, that we live on a soul level, and we choose all of our life lessons. And so after Zach died, although it tested all those beliefs in my numbness right after he died, I believed fully that he was going to come back and he was going to say hi to me in some way, and I thought it was going to be my way. And so I put out a bowl of peanut M&Ms thinking they were going to be scattered all over the counter, or he was going to make a joke on the floor, or he was going to do something with my bowl of peanut M&Ms.
Mm-hmm.
And after several weeks, I realized, you know, although the bowl had become this sacred symbol of death, it didn't move. And I was just...
Did he like peanut M&Ms, Chris?
I did. And it was a joke. Zach has a great
personality. And he knew.
I figured he'd do something with my peanut M&Ms. But he didn't. And I was just crushed. But what I did realize, and this took a long time, I realized that they, on the other side, don't give us signs necessarily that we want. We don't know how they operate on the other side. We don't know what they're capable of. So we have to allow them to give us their signs in their ways. They are going to give us signs in ways that we are going to recognize. If there's something that is between the two of you, they will give you a sign that you will know that it is them. And so, like you said, how did this first happen? Surely wasn't the peanut M&Ms, but within about 3 weeks of my grief, I noticed that we had a sun catcher that had a cow on it. And Zach and I had a joke. It was a long-standing joke about cows. And I noticed that when I would cry and I would sit in the kitchen and I would be talking to him and crying about his death, I noticed that sun catcher would move because there was writing on one side, and it would move around. And I slowly realized that every single time that would happen. And so I tested it. I checked the furnace. I checked the air conditioner. Mm-hmm. Was it on when this was happening? But no, that was Zach's message. That was his first message. So that continued over many, many months, although he continued with various other forms of communication to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures.
Now, when you felt that he was communicating, did you communicate back to encourage this?
Yes. Obviously what I was doing was I was crying, and I would be talking to him and asking him for some kind of a sign, and why did this happen, and just all the questions that you go through after a person dies that cannot be answered.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to him. I would see this moving, and once I realized that it was moving, I would talk to him as if he were right there in the room. I realized that when I would say, thank you so much for this conversation, go to your brother or your grandma and grandpa need to have some verification that you're okay, the sun catcher would stop. And so I knew this was his way of communicating with me, at least the first way of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Second, what I realized after that is I noticed many pictures on the wall would be crooked, and it would usually be a picture that my husband and I would be talking about the night before, or it would be a family photo or something like that that had some, you know, definite symbolism between us. A lot of cow pictures were crooked also.
Mm-hmm.
and bells would move and things like that. So,
and then how did he come more clearer?
Okay. He became clearer in that he started just talking to me and hoping that I would pick it up. It took the third conversation before I realized that that's what was actually happening. Because, again, like anybody else in this situation, your trust has to grow in what's happening. And so as I would drive to work and drive to and from work, I had an hour drive over a mountain. And this was my time to talk with him. He just started telling me that he was okay. That was the first thing I needed to know, is that he was okay, that I, have, as a mother, didn't need to worry about him, that I didn't need to take care of him anymore, that he was all right where he was. Happened that it was on my birthday. So that was wonderful.
Yeah, what a birthday gift.
Oh, it was. But I started...
Chris, did this come in a sign of like a hearing a voice within you, or in meditation, or just out of the clear blue?
Oh, Sherry, thanks for asking. What it was as I would be driving, most often it was also crying, and I would actually hear his voice. And what I found is that this was my method, my main method of communication. I would hear his voice in the middle of my head, and I actually heard him, and his personality would come through. It was undeniably Zach with his, he jokes a lot, and he had a funny personality, and he hadn't changed at all. And so when I realized I was having these conversations in my head, I wanted to preserve them. I didn't have that great of memory, and with the grieving, I barely remembered anything. So I got a small tape recorder, and I started taping all of these conversations to and from work. And so that's mainly when it happened, because that became my meditation. It was the same drive over and over, and this mountain drive became my meditation, my sacred symbol of grieving. It was just my place. It was my drive, and I demonstrated through the book, but that's exactly what it was. That was a symbol of my grief, and it demonstrated it specifically.
Very interesting. So tell us more how that continued, and maybe you could also read us a little bit from your book.
Oh, I'd love to. Okay. It continued for, the book is the first year, and it's been 8 years since he died, and so obviously things have changed, but the book goes in like a monthly format, because that's what I had to do for my journal. I had to show myself where I was at the time, where I was at, and what was I thinking, what was happening to me now, and where was I, you know, several months back. And so this was so helpful to have a history to be able to see, instead of going through this blindly and not identifying what was going on inside of me. I realized that I would recycle different feelings. And when I recognized that, I could recognize that I had to make a decision to go on. I had to make a different decision than to stay stuck in, like, guilt was my favorite feeling. And so I continued to stay stuck in guilt, so that way I didn't have to go on to feel the pain of actually missing him. And so it was real helpful to go through that. What I realized in the grief, by going through this month by month of the first year, is that I absolutely couldn't live that way. I had to choose something different. And so by looking at where I was and how devastated I continued to feel, and physically and emotionally, I knew I just couldn't keep this up. I had to make a decision. And I think that's the piece that we all need to recognize when we are in grief, is that a decision has to be made to live. And that sounds strange, but the loved one has died, and they have gone on, and they're continuing to live. They're not living with us. We can't hug them, but they continue to live. We can't die here. We've made an agreement to live a life, and if we don't, we suffer the loss of those lessons, and we're going to have to learn them sometime else. So you might as well make that decision to go on now and learn those lessons that you were supposed to learn here. And I'm glad that Sherry asked me about reading from what Zach has written, because although this is my book, he really encouraged me along the way to write or keep up with the project and then write the book. And at one point in one conversation, he was really clear about he had some messages that he wanted to relay to everybody. And after he got through all of his points, Zach's personality again, he says, okay, and now you can quote me. So this was part of the book, the things that he was very clear about that he wanted others to be able to learn from this, if not just, you know, listening to my journey, that this is to everybody. And please stop me if you'd like, but the first thing he was talking about is that anybody and everybody can communicate with their loved ones, and that they can open themselves up and communicate and to listen. So he was real clear about that. You know, I've opened myself up, and what I hope to do is help other people understand that this is possible for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that everybody can have these kind of communications, and they can have an easier path to grieving if they do listen to their loved ones, because they're right there trying to help them. And he said the signs are there. You just have to watch for them. And he says they have to watch for what's important to them. And specifically what he was saying is the moving cow may not be important to anybody else because it was a joke between mom and me. But you will have your own signs. And he said to watch for your signs and their communication. They're in very many different ways, so you just need to be aware. There's no certain time for communication, because remember, there's no time here. And so it's not like they're going to come to you at bedtime, they're going to come to you at dinner time, or when you light the candles. It's just they know when you need it. And so don't have any expectations, but ask. He also said they have to be aware and watch. So watch for those signs. And then trust what you sense. There are no coincidences. If you feel like they're there, that's what is. Just trust it. He also talked about trusting your animal's perceptions. They're going to tell you a lot about when your loved one is there. And he says, we are with you. Just be aware.
Wow, that's powerful. It's good news, too, because I at one point I almost asked you if you felt you were selected because of the fact that you're degreed in social work and that you're open to afterlife. But it sounds like they're there for anybody who can open up channels of awareness to see the symbols or the signs.
Absolutely. The signs are not just communication. My family obviously had different relationships with Zach, and so he gave messages to everybody in totally different ways. My brother would not have ever understood the moving of any cow picture or anything like that. But he definitely understood when his radio and his music went up and down, because they had a connection with electronics and with music. And when lights would turn on and off, those would be things that my dad definitely recognized. The week before Zach died, he had a conversation with my mother, and she was saying that it had been such a long time since she'd seen a hummingbird. And the day after he died, she went out into the sunroom, and there was a hummingbird right there in front of the window. And so that definitely was a sign for Zach. And had she not been aware of that, it just would have been a bird out in the
It just would have been a bird, exactly.
Right. So there are lots of things out there that, as Zach kept saying, is just be aware. They're still there. We can't hug them. And, boy, that's the hard part in getting through the grief, is letting go of that physical life that you knew with them, but knowing we still have a relationship on them or with them on a totally different level. And that's that soul level that we will have with them when we get there, too. It's just learning a lot sooner here.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a totally different trip. I'm a totally different person, and I never would have thought that this is where I would be in my life. Although I had all these beliefs before he died, they solidified the beliefs, but they solidified them on a totally different level. I I didn't know that I was going to be tested, that we make these agreements, you know, that that there are no coincidences in life and that everything happens for a reason. I knew that, but now I know it at a totally different level. And pardon me?
Well, it's almost like a more believable level.
Right.
Because you're experiencing it directly.
And knowing that the soul is eternal, when you learn on a soul level, your life becomes a whole lot richer. You learn to live differently with other people in your life. I'm not saying I'm a perfect person, but, you know, and I surely have my days and I backslide and I surely miss him so much. But it really solidified those beliefs, and the morals and the values that I had in going through that testing, they're so much stronger. It has made my life going through the process of life easier now, and it makes my acceptance of him, because I can relate to him now on a soul level as opposed to that kid that I so miss hugging.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, it was really such a healing for you to go through this and to write the book. And have other people been reaching out to you? Have you noticed that you can be there for others that are going through this process?
Well, as I said, I'm involved with the Compassionate Friends, and it's amazing. You know, I don't always just start conversations saying, I talked to my son, who died 8 years ago, because I still get, you know, funny looks from people. Oh, because they're questioning that belief system, but also because people are so afraid to talk about death. And so that's what I have found, is it opens up those channels for people to talk about death. Most people who come in contact with a parent who has experienced the death of their child, they are so afraid of hurting them that they don't want to talk about that child. They don't mention their name. And so that's so painful to a parent. It's almost like that child has been forgotten. And so it's so helpful to be able to talk to families and talk about their child, because we're talking about the reality. We're talking about death, and we're bringing it out into the open. Again, that's one of the things that I really would hope that by bringing this out, that it's talking about having those people still in your life, but it's also opening up those channels for families and people to talk about death and to talk about what's going to happen, because it's devastating. Death is. And if you don't talk about death, we get stuck afterwards. And my hope is that this would be a way to open people up to talk about it. And that's what I have found is I do have friends at work. We're all about the same age, and so we're all having to deal with elderly parents or grandparents, and so we all experience death somewhere along the line. And boy, it just makes your process so much easier if you can say the word, if you can say death, if you can say dying. You know, you can get through it.
Mm-hmm. It is important to bring that up, because, you know, it's just something that people don't want to talk about, and just to be able to open that up, that this is a conversation that we need to be able to accept, that it's going, that it is happening, embrace it, right? And I know I love to, make my mother's favorite dinner, or I also encourage people to continue to talk about their loved ones and not to forget them, and, you know, bring them into the conversation. I know that, you know, when I'm sitting at a dinner party with friends that know or knew my mother, we're always, it's a conversation that comes up, and we, you know, we like to, it gives you that feeling that you're bringing them, they're around, and that feels good.
Oh, you bet. It they are. They're still a part of your life. Why shouldn't we talk about them? Sure, they're not experiencing the things with you in the way that you are, you know, although they are experiencing them with you. You know, they're still a part of your life. And I think it's the fear. I think people have such a fear of their own death that they don't want to even talk about death. And they have a fear of how painful death will be if I think about what it might be like to lose somebody in my life. And I know that's very true, because the weekend before Zach died, I had an experience at work. And here I am thinking, you know, I've gone through this now, but that a few days before he died, I was talking to a coworker who their child had died recently, or it was a friend of hers that died. And I was saying, I don't know if I can handle this. I need to go into my office right now because this is pretty painful right now, and I'll come back in a couple minutes. And I realized, you know, if I was doing that, then I know that there are a lot of people out there who are afraid to face death, and not necessarily my own, but somebody else's, just because it's too painful to think of. Mm-hmm. And so that is a real important piece of this whole process, and because of my experiences in that situation, I really want to be able to talk about death and openly, so that people are more willing to discuss death also.
And did it make you less fearful of your own death, being able to embrace and know that, you know, death is inevitable, but, you know, and then you will see your son?
Absolutely. So, yeah. One thing, yes, I will see Zach. I'm just really excited to be able to live on this soul level that he's encouraging me to look at. He knows I can't live it, but he's helping me see that there is more to this life than just going to work and doing the chores and you know, grocery shopping, those type of things, that life is on a different level, and I'm really looking forward to living that. And, you know, and seeing him also. But seeing all the other relatives that I've made agreements with, and I'm really anxious to find out how all these things fit together. You know, all these agreements that I've made with the different people in this life and other lives, and because I know that once I get back there, I'm going to understand and see all the pieces of this puzzle and how it fits. And that's kind of exciting to me, to be able to see that.
And has your husband been a part of this also? Is he getting the same, you know, is he on the same page? Is he getting something out of this?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. That's real interesting, and that's been part of this process too. It was quite a few months before I even told him that this is what was happening. He's Zach's stepfather, and he was very close to him, but he was probably the absolute perfect supporter for me, because he kept saying that he could not even imagine what it would be like to lose a child, but yet he gave me so much space, and he just supported whatever I needed to do. If I needed the house all to myself, he would just leave. Or just whatever I needed. He had his own experience with Zach, and he has had some experiences of his own with his mother's death and his father's. But he saw Zach, and this was Zach's goodbye to him. And so it prepared him for the loss of Zach. He saw him... The night that he went, Jim is a retired police detective, so he was able to go check the car to see if there were any possessions that we needed to get out of the car. And it was, he said, the worst situation he'd ever had to deal with because it was so personal. But Zach also knew that, too. And that night when he got home, he made himself present in the backyard as if to say goodbye. Mm. And so Jim is a strong believer, and he, you know, he has grown with me. And,
right.
And he doesn't get as many of the signs as I do, but he's very, very supportive.
So tell our listeners, what is your intention with the book, and you know, what are you, how are you looking to get this word out, and how they can find you?
Oh, thank you. Well, my purpose in writing it was, obviously, when I was just writing it, that was my journal, but I realized that there are so many people out there who, well, I understand that 19% of the adult population have experienced the death of a child, and that's a huge percentage of people who are in grief. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is to help them in that grief, just knowing people can get through it because it's so devastating and so all-encompassing that you think that you're never going to get out of this. You're never going to move beyond where you are when you're there. And you know, I hope that it would normalize the grief, that when people feel different and crazy and stuck and alone, I'm hoping that by reading this, they'll probably identify with so many things that I did, because I know a lot of the things I did. I've talked with other parents too, and they've experienced some of the same things. And so, you know, in grief. And so I want to normalize it for people to know that they're not alone, that they're not different. And I also want people to know that they can survive it. You know, I know here where I am 8 years ago, I'm not the same person I was after he died. I was devastated, and my whole life was shattered, and I didn't think I could ever get beyond that point. And so I'm hoping to reassure people that they can survive it and that they can make a decision to go on, and they can have a life. It'll be totally different, but you can have a life after the death of a child or a close loved one. Because we've planned all of this. My hope is to have people understand, and I'm not going to try to convince anybody of anything, but I truly, strongly believe that there are no coincidences and that there are no accidents in life because we've planned them. We have made this plan with the people in our lives, and we are to learn these lessons from these people, places, and things that we've planned in this life. And my hope is that people will have an open mind to be able to see these things in their life and to learn to trust what they are experiencing and to have the faith to go on.
And, Chris, how can people get this book?
We're down to 3 minutes.
Okay. I have a wonderful new web designer who is reorganizing my website, but it is right now on afterlifebooks.com, and she'll be putting on a PayPal soon, so you can contact me, but they're on all of the online sources like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and you know, all of the bookstores online.
Beautiful.
And I'd love to hear from anybody if they want to contact me on the website. There is a contact page.
Okay, good. Well, we are just really happy that you came on the show with us, because this is a delicate subject, and it sounds like you have learned a lot from your experience, and you're sharing that with others who are going through grieving process. So Thank you so much for being on our show, and we do know that our listeners will take an interest, and they'll be going to some of the websites to learn more about you and your book, and hopefully order the book. And thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I would love to, like I said, I'd love to hear from anybody if they want to share their experiences, or just contact me if they have questions.
As I was saying in the beginning, it's also a reminder that we have to live one day at a time and enjoy every moment of every day.
Absolutely.
And, you know, be able to tell our loved ones how we feel and express ourselves and really be in the moment.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And death is just one step in this process, but after death you can't tell them and hear their response. So please
exactly.
Please do talk to your loved ones.
Wow, well, that's a good message. Thank you, Chris. We're signing off
thank
now.
Thank you. Have a great day, and we enjoyed hearing from you.
Patty and Sherry, thanks so much.
Okay.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, listeners. You have been listening to Chris Mulligan, the author of Afterlife Agreements, A Gift from Beyond. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a great week. Bye-bye, everybody.